Hello again, this is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour, and we're ready to go live again. I'm not on a trip this week, I'm doing live. I don't know about what it's like where you guys are, but here, you know, we are coming out of the winter, and it's been so beautiful we've had all the windows open. I think it was a mistake because now the pollen is coming in. Spring has sprung, and I'm beginning to feel it, so I'm just hoping I'm going to be able to do the show without starting sneezing. But I think a lot of you have that whenever the trees all start coming out at one time. Okay, but as I told you last week, we are having our fourth conference that my company puts on. It's going to be in June. That's June the 12th to the 14th. And it's the Transformation Conference, and this is the fourth one that we're going to be doing. Every year they just get better and better and bigger and bigger. And we're now even in a much larger venue that I don't think we're ever going to outgrow this one. And so from now, started last week until June, the guests I'm going to have on the show are going to be the ones who will be speakers at the conference. So we're trying to let them get used to speaking on the radio and talking about their books so they'll be ready to go for the conference. And the conference is in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Or if you want to be technical, it's really Bentonville. It's out by the airport. It's where the venue is, the Clarion Hotel. Anybody that wants more information about the conference, check it out on our website. It has all of the information there. And the website is www.ozarkmountain.com. That's OZARKMT.com. And you'll have all the information about the conference. Okay. Now, my guest tonight is Keith Bender.
Hang up.
And he has written the book called The Despiritualized Church. And I think people who know, you know, the kind of work that I do print and I publish and the guests I have on the show, we do go into controversy. I don't mind controversy. The one thing I don't have on my show is conspiracy, government things. But we do have a lot of controversy, and my show is, and the books are always intended to make people think. I want them to ask questions. I want them to make up their own mind and to think for themselves. So Keith Bender has written the book, The Despiritualized Church, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. You're there, aren't you, Keith?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. I wanted to tell them that because, you know, I've written about these same subjects also. Before we go on, let me give out the toll-free number. I always almost forget that every week. We have a toll-free number in case anyone wants to call in and ask questions. The toll-free number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. Okay, Keith. Now, this is just done conversational style. We're just going to talk. First, I want to know, to tell people about you, about your background, and,
okay,
you know, and how you came to write this book.
Okay. Well, I'm an older fella. I'm an 81 years old, but I've been a...
Say older, I'm getting there.
Excuse me? Oh, you're getting there?
What?
Join the club, huh?
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm definitely there, so go ahead.
And you,
yeah.
My life has been topsy-turvy. It's been a life of change constantly. From one thing to another, every 3 to 4 years has been a major change in my life. Could never understand what it was until suddenly in these last few years, everything started coming together, and I understand what's been going on in my life. I have been giving a lot of experiences by my guides for the purpose of wiping out a lot of the past life problems and situations that I have incurred, and trying to clean myself up in a way. But anyway, I have started writing around 1997. 1997. And it was interesting how that happened. I was receiving a reading, and my guides broke in and said, "Have you ever stopped, ever thought you'd like to write?" And I said, "Yes, I have." "Did you ever write a book? You ever want to write a book?" I said, "No, I never thought of that." "Well, would you like to write a book?" "Yes, I would." "Well, you're going to." So I did. The first book was the My Search for Truth, My Own Spiritual Adventure, and it was published, entitled Ark of the Rainbow, A-R-K. And then from there on, I just wrote a series of articles, and finally I found out that how I got into writing this book is because I had written a series of articles that had kind of laid the foundation for this book. It was a discussion of the church, what happened to it, what Jesus tried to establish, and how what happened to it, and where it is now, and so forth. So basically that's what the book is about. It's a discussion of what happened, why it happened, and what we can do to bring it back to the original foundation that Jesus wanted to establish.
Okay, because, you know, I've been there also, because I have, you know, I've got 15 books that I've written, and two of them dealt with the missing years of Jesus and the way they, that it was all supposed to be and how it was changed. So I've written on the same subject. That's one of the reasons why I agreed to publish your book, because I know it is true. And, you know, I started out in the church probably the same way you did. I used to teach Sunday school, so we've been there, done that.
Yes.
And that's why I tell people, I always had too many questions that they couldn't answer. And so it just finally got to the point that I was finding answers other places, and I figure that's part of our growing experience.
Well, I agree with you on that. Truth is to be found in the inner. I went through all kinds of things in my search, and I was a deacon in the Presbyterian Church, and I found that wasn't it. There was no answers there. In fact, I went to a minister one time. I said, "Jim," I said, "I'm losing my faith. What do I do?" "Well, Keith, you've got to have faith." "I know it, Jim. That's why I'm here. But how do I get it? How do I save it?" "Well," we just talked and talked and talked. And he says, "Well, you got to have faith, Keith." And so I got no answers from him. And when I left, I did a lot of soul searching, and I realized, I started praying just every day, no answers were coming. Finally, I said to myself, "Oh, I've got to do something about it." So I started praying to God. That's kind of honest, you might say. Started out as a 16-word prayer, and I prayed that same thing for 6 months. And it went like this: "Dear God, I don't even know if you exist, but if you do, lead me to truth." At the end of that 6 months, I picked up a book, and wow, there was my lead in for a whole new life. And the book was based on Edgar Cayce, who's There Is a River.
Yeah, I know the book. But I was going to say, too, when I went to the preacher and began asking questions, they said they didn't have the answer, but they said, "You'll know all the answers when you die." I don't want to wait that long. I want to know them now.
A lot of good it does now, doesn't it? Oh, my. Well, they don't know, Dolores. They just don't have any idea of what it is.
I know. They have to come up with an answer like that.
Well, this is part of my book. You see, there are two basic approaches to truth, or to faith, you might say, or salvation. One is the orthodox approach, when all you have to do is just believe and obey the rules of the church and so forth, and you're saved. The other way is to
ask any questions. Don't ask any questions.
Oh, no, don't do that.
Part of it, believe, obey, and don't ask questions.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So, and the other approach to salvation or truth is simply knowledge. And so that's the Gnostic approach, G-N-O-S-I-S. I know you know how to spell it. But anyway, yep. It's the old Greek word for knowledge. And there you have to go within. You can't rely on what other people have done. So it's kind of an interesting approach, a far different approach than the typical church.
Mm-hmm. So that's what's way I did the same thing, because that's why I'm always telling people at my lectures, I say, ask lots and lots of questions and then make up your own mind. Don't let anyone tell you what to believe. Don't give your power away to anyone. Ask lots of questions and find your own truth. Your truth may not be the same as everybody else's, but it, at least it is yours.
Yeah, that's what right. Well, the foundation may be the same, but your interpretation of the foundation differs from one person to another. And so that's kind of difficult. But I remember one article I wrote, as I finished the article, God took over and added one more little paragraph. So I was talking about how you get at the truth. Where is it? How do you find it? And so forth. And I suggested in this article that, you might just write everything off your slate, erase the whole thing, everything you've been taught, everything, all your understandings and impressions and attitudes and everything else, wipe them off and go back in a time machine to Jesus' time and follow him. Go to the Sermon on the Mount. Follow him as he makes his, as he heals and as he does all these things. And let these things become absorbed. You watch what's going on, what he is saying, what he's doing, and so forth, and let it resonate with the inner self here. And then when you're all through with that day, you pack up everything, and you come back into this lifetime, and you compare it with what you've been taught. And I said, you'll be shocked. Or he said, you'll be shocked. It's not the same thing. And then he added this. He says, be not fooled by the wisdom of men. They know not what they speak, for they know not truth. It must be that you shall teach yourself. So that's the essence of it, and I'm sure you agree the same thing. You got to teach yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's what I've written about, too, that the church today was not at all the way he intended it to be.
No, not at all.
Because in my books, I wrote Jesus in the Essenes, and that showed that. Well, he had lots and lots of teaching, but I guess you might speak about that too. The church wants you to believe that he just appeared one day with all of this knowledge, came direct from God with all of the knowledge, that he had never been taught anything by man.
Yes.
But
yes.
That's not true, because I've done a tremendous amount of research when I was writing my books. And in the book, The Jesus and the Essenes, it talks about the missing years. He studied with every teacher in the world, the known world at that time, because he traveled with his uncle, Joseph of Arimathea, and he took him to all the wise men and the teachers of the world. So he
We're fading out, Doris. I can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
No, you faded out.
Oh, that must be something in the station then, I guess.
Oh, I've had trouble with my phones up here, so I don't know. It'll probably be all right. But
okay.
I agree with you 100%. Nobody realizes that he went to Egypt and he went to Tibet and even to Central American countries and so forth. They don't know all those things.
He studied with the Druids in England. He had a tremendous amount of education and teaching, and he was able to learn very, very quickly. So when he began his ministry, he was not just coming in cold. He had all of this training. But the church doesn't want you to think that.
Right.
He was really taught by people.
That's right.
The wise teachers of the world at that time, the ones that knew metaphysics and the Gnostic teachings.
Well, there's another thing here too, Dolores. It's my understanding and my research that Jesus raised as a Gnostic based on the knowledge. And Joseph and Mary were Gnostics, but so were half or seven of his disciples Gnostics. And
yes.
So the whole thing was based on the salvation of knowledge, of truth, and so forth. And he had in a very intensive training before he was 12, and then at 12, his guides, I suppose it was, sent him to all these other places in the world for further knowledge and education. He was no dummy. He was very, very well educated and very intelligent. By the time he was 30 and came back to his final mission. So well, the church just doesn't have any understanding of what he was, where he came from, what he stood for, anything else, or his education. He was just a young child that gets in trouble like a lot of boys do, and then all of a sudden he disappeared for 13 or for 18 years, and he came back, all this, he was ready to perform a service. They just kind of missed the boat.
Yeah, and they want people to think that way. But you have probably done the research like I have of his time in England. And I have had a lot of books sent to me because I go to England regularly. They've sent me a lot of books that no one knows about the legends of the time when Jesus was over there. And what I found is when he was doing his ministry, even with his disciples, they had no leader. They didn't need a leader. There was not supposed to be a leader. They would take turns doing healing, teaching healing, and teaching what they had learned. And they did this in people's homes and different places they met. And this was what it was supposed to be, if you want to call it a church. He never called it a church. But in the beginning, in England, it was called The Way. This was after the crucifixion, and when he went to England, his disciples went there and started the church. It was called The Way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was based on the way he did the miracles and the healing and his ministry of preaching about love, and that was what it was supposed to be, and that's what people don't realize.
No, they haven't been taught that. Unfortunately, from what
they don't realize that the Romans are the ones who made the church the way it is, and look what that time. That was during the time when the Romans were taking over the world. Naturally, they're going to have rules and regulations.
Yeah, they, in my research, I found out that after Jesus died and the disciples had to take over, they started in coming up with their own impressions of what he meant when he said this or that and so forth. And that grew over time to the point where in a couple hundred years and so forth, it came be totally different from what he originally wanted to establish. For example, like you started to mention, he taught love and forgiveness and non-judgment and so forth. And the church kind of take over. By the church, I mean the universal church, which came to be called Catholic with a capital C. Anyway, they kind of took over with their bishops and so forth. And they said, no, he meant this. So he meant that. No, he should have said this. So we'll add that. And then along comes Constantine, and he changed the thing. And he told him, I want this out of the Bible. I want this and so forth and so forth. And so the bishops didn't have power at that time. So they kowtowed to Constantine, and they changed the Bible, and over a period of 500-600 years, it was totally different from what the original was. From a church of love, it became a church of fear, and that's what we have inherited up to this day. It's a church of fear and abject obedience where nobody can think for themselves. That is, if you're a good churchman, if you're a good Catholic or a good Presbyterian or whatever, you don't think for yourself. You got to obey what the bishops say, you see. So they turned the whole thing inside and out, and it's a different ball game entirely from what Jesus wanted.
Yeah, they had to you had to do what you were told. But see, that's what I tell people. If you really read the Bible, even though the Bible has been changed many, many times too, but if you really read the Bible, Jesus never knew a sinner. He never condemned anyone, and he never said anyone had sinned.
Right.
That was the church came up with the seven deadly sins and all of that. That was an invention of theirs. Jesus never condemned anyone, and he never even knew a sinner.
He never judged.
He met with them, and he ate with them and slept in their houses. And he knew everyone was equal, and that was the way it was supposed to be.
Yep. Well, the bishops, they realized that they were coming up with something different than what Jesus wanted, but they felt they had to in order to keep their followers in line and not go off willy-nilly and doing this and doing that and starting different things and so forth. So they had to institute a lot of rules and regulations, and they were all based on abject obedience, and the obedience was based on fear. if you don't obey, you're in trouble, boy. You're in big trouble. And so everybody had to obey, and it just became, well, the church became churchified, you know, full of rules and regulations and do's and don'ts. I don't know if you're aware of it, but I happened to run across this by accident one time. The original Ten Commandments numbered 10. But nowadays, there are 614 different rules and regulations in the Hebrew church, in Judaism. Isn't that something, how it does that? And the same thing was happening to Christianity. They added all these things and so forth.
So they've added as they went along.
Excuse me?
They've added as they went along, then they added more rules and regulations to the original 10, then.
Yeah.
Well, see, another thing I found in my work is there were definitely women disciples. Jesus had more women followers than he had men, because women have the ability to understand what he was saying because of their intuitive ability. Well, naturally,
right,
the church had to take all of that out immediately. They weren't going to let that be known. And I don't know if you found that out in your work, but that's what's coming up.
Well, I found out in my research that women were downtrodden and they weren't respected and so forth. But Mary Magdalene, on the other hand, was from a well-educated family, intelligent, well-educated, highly spiritually developed. And she was, in fact, is my understanding, that she was the equal of Jesus, his dual nature. And where he is the masculine aspect of it, and she was the feminine part. And so and not only was she the whore that Pope Gregory said she was in 600 something, she was the 13th disciple that Jesus loved. You know, she was highly respected. So it was, it was interesting that she was standing out way above all the rest of the women at that time, because she was, she was proven to be, you know what I am doing? I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not phrasing what I want to say.
but she was definitely not a whore. See, we just published a book.
She was a highly spiritual being.
Yes, we just published a book called The Power of the Magdalene, and they were on my show a few weeks ago. They from England. And a something thing that I have found is that she was an Egyptian priestess, schooled in the highest metaphysical knowledge there is.
I'm sorry, say that again?
She was an Egyptian priestess.
Oh.
And she had been schooled in Egypt in the highest metaphysical and Gnostic knowledge there was. And
all
this
right.
is why her and Jesus were equals, because he could talk to her and she could understand. And the other disciples were very jealous of her because of their relationship, because he could speak to her. And that was very important. But no, she was a highly evolved metaphysical person. But naturally, the church wasn't going to allow that to be known, so they said she was a whore and made it look like she was nothing. All of that is another one of the lies that have been brought into the Bible.
Yeah. Well, the church has tried to justify that label because they say that she was the prostitute that washed Jesus' feet with her hair and stuff like that. But the reason that Pope Gregory called her the whore is to show the people that even a whore or a prostitute can become a highly spiritual being through Jesus, you see. But what they ignored the fact of her background and what she really was, you see. So they just, and the reason they did that is to reaffirm their masculine power base, because Mary Magdalene was achieving great respectability and was a highly spiritually developed person in her own right, and she could have replaced Mother Mary in the eyes of the followers of Christianity, and destroyed somewhat of the power that the bishops had in the church. So they had to stop that. So they stopped it by making her a whore, and then they compensated for that by saying, oh, but she was a good whore, and she became Christed. Not Christed, but she became a saint.
Okay.
And so forth. So I think it was through fear and an attempt to consolidate their power that they did that in the first place.
But, you know, it always was that man had to be the one. You know, if you go way, way back into history, women were the ones who were worshipped. The goddess worship is much, much older than the church. But whenever they had to form a church, it had to do away and turn it around to be a masculine-dominated religion rather than the goddess worship. So a lot of that's coming back. They said the women are coming into their own again now. So there's, you know, things are changing. We're coming around anyway.
Well, that's my impression too. That the feminine was the supreme. I don't know if that's the way to say it, but anyway, they had far greater spirituality and power than the masculine did in those years. And in fact, they became quite ruthless, as I understand, in the way they treated men. So when man got the opportunity to take over power and so forth, they threw the gauntlet down and said, okay, now you are subjected and you're going to do this and you're going to be that and so forth. But like you said, it's my impression that all these things are changing around. My goodness, in the last 10, 20, 30 years, look what's happened to the women. And they're impatient and so forth, but look at what they've accomplished and look where they're going. If you watch the news programs, for again, I'm constantly amazed at the number of women that are assuming positions of responsibility in this country, all over the place, and most of them are young, so the whole thing is changing, and rightfully so. But what I'm hoping is it won't go to the other opposite extreme, that the pendulum will settle down in the middle somewhere. We'll have a balance and harmony between the two.
It's definitely turning around. But did you do the research to find out where the Protestant movement came from?
Whenever, the Protestant?
The Protestant, you know, whenever way back, I think it was Martin Luther and there was Calvin, whenever they split, you know, from the Catholic Church and formed the Protestant of different religions. Did you research to find out what was the reason, main reason why they split from the Catholic Church? Have you read that part or not? You may, you know, I've done a lot. Maybe I've done a different direction than you have. But do you want me to tell you what it was?
What?
Okay. You know, because they were going along with the Catholic telling them what all to do. But then all of a sudden, they said the Catholic religion wanted to bring in Mary and make her into a dominant character. And up to that time, before the Protestant movement, she had not been. And they were arguing about it because they said, she is not given that much importance in the Bible. Why do you want to make her into a major player, a major character? And I'm sorry if I'm offending any Catholics out there because she does many qualities, but I want to tell the history anyway. But they said, she is not that big of a character in the Bible, and they thought Jesus should be the main character. So they didn't want her them to bring in Mother Mary and make her into a saint and make her into a important religious person. So that was when they decided, okay, if you're going to go ahead with this, we will break from the Catholic Church. And they formed the Protestant movement, which means they protested. The Protestant means they protested and formed their own religion based on Jesus. Without Mary, you know, the Protestant religions don't have Mary as a character at all. This was why the split came between the Catholics and the Protestants. Had you heard that before?
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh.
Well, what the Protestant movement... What the Protestant movement... Go ahead.
I think it's fascinating to know the history of these things anyway, you know? Uh-huh.
Well, I think what the Protestant movement did was give the people the freedom for the first time to do their own reasoning, to think for themselves, and to decide what they feel is the truth. And they helped them see that what they had been believing and following for 1,500 years was not the truth. It was only part of it, but it was misleading the people. So, in other words, the church, as because of its power and so forth, was leading the people down a path of destruction. It despiritualized the church. It removed the spirit from the church, from the God spirit, from the Jesus spirit, and it substituted man spirit in it. And as a result, that's what came of it. And they started humanizing their belief systems and so forth. And this is what finally forced Martin Luther into rebellion. And he gave the people an opportunity to break away and think for themselves, whereas before they dared not think for themselves. My goodness, that was excommunication of that. And a few years earlier, it was the torture racks and the Inquisition.
Oh, yeah.
So he did a great service.
Yes, he did, and that changed everything in those days anyway. But also what people don't realize is that the church, when they did the Inquisition and the witch hunts and were killing what they called witches, they were not really after witches. They were killing those people that had the Gnostic knowledge, the secret knowledge, because they were trying to do away with all of that because it was a threat to the established church.
Yes. Well, it's coming out now, though, in the last 60 years. In the last 60 years, look what's been discovered. My goodness, the Hammadi texts, how many scrolls was there? 50, 60 scrolls, something like that, discovered in this huge clay jar. And it's just revolutionizing the belief system. And then the Dead Sea Scrolls and the individual scrolls, the Gospel of Mary, the Gospel of Peter and others are all being found. And there's going to be a lot more found. Anyway, what they're doing, what God is doing, in my opinion, is bringing the truth out into the open. And now he's bringing out the early teachings that the early church had as their basis of knowledge. He's bringing it out now. And they had been totally destroyed under the order of the bishops in the middle 500-600 years AD, you see. So it's being revealed now. It's time for the big change, and it's happening, and nothing is going to stop it. It's on the way. It's here.
I know. That's the thing. You know, people think that the Bible was written by the hand of God. They don't realize, especially in the Council of Nicene, is when they decided which parts. They had thousands and thousands of books, letters, stories, scrolls. They decided what was going to be put into the Bible, what was going to be incorporated into the Bible that we have today. And they're the ones that decided, and they decided this is what we will say Jesus said. And they was written by men, these different priests at these councils. And this is what people don't realize. But when I was doing the research, too, they said it was, I don't remember what year it was, some of the people, after they'd had already been written the Bible, they said, but look at all these other stories and letters and scrolls. They need to be in there also because they're very valuable parts of Jesus's life. They said, nope, we've written it now. We're not going to add any more. That's that. And that's how the Bible was formed.
Well, even you take the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Okay, mm-hmm. Everybody believes they were written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But they haven't. They weren't. Nobody has any idea who they were written by. So the Bible is not as reliable as people think it is. And there's so much added to the Bible that Jesus never taught, never said. And things that he did say, they removed and so forth. In other words, they bastardized the Bible. They changed it into something totally different from what Jesus wanted. And so the people, they go along in their ignorance, and I mean that in a complimentary way, but in an honest evaluation. Ignorance does not mean stupidity. It simply means lack of knowledge. In their ignorance, they believe what they were taught is the truth, and so they go along with this and just locked in this prison of fear and conditioning and brainwashing, and they just are unable to see the truth that is trying to break out and become part of their understanding.
Because we've been taught for so many years, just don't ask questions, just believe what we say. And, you know, I mean, I've been into beautiful cathedrals in Europe, and they are very beautiful, and they're very spiritual. But And you look at the thing behind it is the thing. I mean, if you have the building, but then you also have the teachings.
Yeah.
I think you can have both. I think you can have the beauty of the building, the church, and all of that, and also think for yourself and have them. I think you can have both if that's what people want.
Well, it's interesting, too, Dolores, if you look at those churches, like the Notre Dame Cathedral and the Chartres and so forth, you'll see some of the most beautiful edifices ever constructed by the mind of man. And what is so ironic about it, you have these tremendous spiritual edifices raising. You go into it and you just kind of feel the you resonate with God. But at the same time those things were built, Christianity was going through the most horrendous, evil, torturous period in its life in the Inquisition, where people were tortured and maimed out of pure, I don't know what their motive was, but they said it was love, but it wasn't love. It was just, you know, it was, what's ironic is that it was this dichotomy. You had this terrible, horrible things going on in the world where people could not be themselves whatsoever. If they tried, they were tortured. And then you have this beautiful edifices. It's all man-made. Everything was constructed by man. So, excuse me?
Yeah, I just said, I'm agreeing with you. Go ahead. I'm agreeing with you. Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I just said yes on there, okay. But I had a comment there I was going to make, but go ahead with what you were saying. I do agree with what you're saying. But, I lost my thought. It'll come back in a minute. But see, this is one of the things, too. I know what it was. See, I've done thousands and thousands of radio shows way before I ever got my own show. And back in those days, I would get tricked into doing religious radio shows. I didn't know who the narrator was going to be, didn't know what the subject was going to be. And I'd get on there, and they'd be trying to make me look like a fool because of my beliefs. And they would go on and on like this, and I would talk about the Nicene convention, you know, when the Bibles were changed and everything, and we talked about the Inquisition. They said, no man has ever been killed in the name of God. And I said, oh, my gosh, how can you say that? Haven't you ever looked at your history?
I say, who said that?
It was the narrator on a radio show that I did, Christian And after that, I got to think, I'm not going to win this argument. I'll just let them talk, make a fool of themselves, and let the people listening make up their own minds. Because how can they say no man has ever been killed in the name of God when they fought wars over religion back in those days?
Well,
you know, Crusades, all of that. You know, it was a ridiculous statement for them to make.
Now, that's just plain ignorance.
I know, but I've
And the trouble is they believe it.
I know. I got tricked into a lot of those radio shows in my early days because I didn't know what the show was going to be about. They'd be trying to make me look like a fool.
Yeah.
But they didn't realize I've done a lot of research. But another thing I do want to bring up, too, is the church did take all reference to reincarnation out of the Bible. And I've mentioned that several times on my show.
They tried to, but they didn't quite succeed.
Yeah, there's still some references
there.
There
were three things in the Bible I have them written down somewhere.
It's in my books. So.
Excuse me?
It's in my books. I've quoted them.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
but,
there were three places in there where Jesus and so forth, there were discussions of reincarnation, but I think they simply goofed. They missed them. Because they wanted to take everything out.
They felt they had to take it out because otherwise, if people thought there was a chance that they might come back and live again, they wouldn't be able to control them.
Oh, the church could not allow that.
That's what I mean. They couldn't allow
that
belief to be there.
If they did that, they would lose their control. because their control is based on fear of one life. And if you don't make it in this life, buddy, you're going to hell, and there's no question about it. But, you know, see, here's another thing, and they've got everything so twisted around and so under their control that everybody is afraid to do anything. For example, they say, okay, God doesn't hear you anymore because of original sin. So you can't go to God. You have to go to the church, and the priest will be your intermediary and so forth. And so you got to do what they say and all this, and you don't think for yourself. And now I'm in the same boat you are. I lost my train of thought.
I know what you mean. But yeah, that's what they've tried to do, that so that nobody will think for themselves. But also then they brought in this concept of hell, and there is no hell.
Right.
Not like they say it is.
No hell and no sin. And you know what? If they ever dropped the concept of sin, if they were to ever admit that there is no such thing as sin, simply mistakes, the whole edifice of Christianity, of the Christian churches, would collapse.
Definitely.
It would die overnight, because sin is what keeps the church above the masses. It's what can give them the control. So they started that with the fall, where Adam and Eve ate of an apple, and they were kicked out of Eden. But then so are all the rest of the offspring. And that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. God is a God of love. He doesn't do things. He doesn't punish. You know, he loves, he forgives, and so forth. So to condemn millions and billions of people in the world because two people long ago took a bite of an apple, that just goes everything against God, what he stands for, you know, which is love and forgiveness.
There's a lot of things
that the church has done to cement their control over people, and it's all based on fear.
But that's what I talk about in my lectures too, is that as parents, if your child does something wrong, you're not going to throw them in the oven. You're going to give them every chance to, you know, to make amends. You know, if you love them, even if your child goes to prison, you still love that child. You're never going to condemn them the way they say the church does. And if as parents we feel that way, God is so much more than that. You know that he does not condemn you because you make a mistake. We just hope we're going to learn from the mistake, hopefully, and go on from there and not do it again. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. No, God would never do that. God is a God of love. And he just doesn't make anything that's not pure and perfect. After all, he makes it in his image. And if we say God is perfect, we say God is love, we say God is all these good things and so forth, and then we turn around and says he created the children of Adam and Eve as evil beings. They were born in sin, and they were evil, and they lived lives of evil and sin for the rest of eternity. That's kind of contradictory, isn't it?
It definitely doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But see, that's what I'm always lecturing about, is Earth is a school, and we come here to learn lessons. And, you know, it doesn't matter how long it's going to take us to learn a lesson, how many lives it's going to take. You can't go on to the next grade until you finish the lessons in this grade. And you may be able to work it out in one life. You may have to come back several lives before you get that lesson. But it doesn't make any difference. You have eternity to learn it. It's hopefully you're going to learn it quicker than taking an eternity to learn one thing, because that's what it's all about. It's just trying to, if you make mistakes, learn from it, and then move on, not make the same mistakes again. Growing with the whole thing. That's the way I look at it. It's just a school that we have to go to.
Well, that's all sin is a mistake, and a mistake can be corrected. And God, excuse me a second, and God gives us that opportunity to correct a mistake, to learn from it, and so forth. He doesn't punish us for making mistakes, but according to the traditional church The Christian understanding is that if you make a mistake and if it isn't forgiven by God, then you're going to hell. Well, okay, that's interesting because we can't go to God because the church says that we were members of the original family and we ate a bite of the apple ourselves, and so that we were condemned to be kicked out of Eden also. And so we have to suffer all these things. So it comes back down to that a lot of contradictions, and they are very apparent when you open your mind and look at it with a fresh viewpoint. Allow the truth to seep in a little at a time, but after a while you'll begin to realize, hey, what I have understood just may not be the truth that I thought it was all my lifetime. There is more here to it, and I want to find out what it is. That's where I came from, by the way.
Yeah.
Over the period of time, I lost my faith, which forced me to go within, and that's where the truth was. The source of truth is inside. It's not out here in the books or Bibles or church or buildings or libraries or anything else. It's right inside in our own being.
And I always tell people, it's like even when you're trying to help other people, I said, just give them a few crumbs. Don't try to give them the whole loaf. They can't understand it. Give them
a few crumbs.
Let them digest that. And then maybe they're ready to ask a few more questions and a few more questions. You can't give them the whole thing. You just have to do it very gradually until they can understand.
Right.
And they gain more and more knowledge. That's the way it works.
Well, that's what Jesus tried to accomplish. He had his disciples, and they received the teachings of the mysteries. He was asked one time why he spoke in parables to the masses. He said, because they simply don't understand. They're not developed enough spiritually to be able to understand the mysteries if it was given to them. So therefore, I teach you the mystery so that you understand, because that's your mission in this life. But for the masses, I teach in parables. They will receive a message which will help them along. But everybody in life, as you know, is at a spiritual level according to their prior spiritual development. And they should be given only what they can use at that time and not be force-fed something else, like you're saying, into something that could be destructive to them. It could set them back for a lifetime or two, you see, instead of helping them.
But also what I've found is the parables are in different layers. They're like a puzzle. That he spoke one way that the ordinary person would perceive the parable in one way. One that was a little more advanced would perceive it in another way. Then the ones who knew the secret mystery behind it would get a whole other message out of it. So this is why he did the parables, for that reason.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well.
But I want to bring that up about hell, because what I have found, people create their own hell. They make their own selves miserable on earth in what they do in their life. Because it's all, that's the only good and bad, if you want to talk about good or evil, is what people do. What they do with these things, the mistakes they make. And they create their own hell, and if they choose to live in that, that is their own decision, but they don't have to. They can get out once they begin to ask questions and to really see it for what it really is. But you're not going to go to hell once you die, because there isn't any over there.
That's right. It's all in the mind.
Yep.
And there are people that die, you know, they have out-of-body experiences and so forth. That's interesting, because some of them come back and they say they were in hell. Well, what they did is they found out, they opened up their mind, I believe, to things that they have planted in their minds of what they could expect if they continued on the road they were on. So they have these horrendous, hellish experiences, which are all mental. They're not doomed to a condition of hell for eternity. They're only in that experience as long as they accept it. Once they realize that they don't have to be there, hey, there's more to this and there's better than this. I'm going to find out what that is. And so they get out of their self-imposed hell.
Help them to look at their lives in a different way.
Excuse me?
It helps them to look at their lives in a different way if you look at it that way. Because I've spent many years studying out-of-the-body experiences and all of this, so I have a great deal of background in all of that. So I know how it all works, and it's quite amazing, but I do encourage people to think for themselves, ask questions. Don't take anybody's word for anything.
That's exactly it.
Read and get your own information. Well, I'm watching the clock, so we're coming up to time. Hour goes very fast on this show. But if people want to contact you, Keith, do you want them to email you, or do you want to come through us, or how do you want to do it?
I'm sorry, say again?
If people out there who are listening, if they want to contact you, I don't remember, did you want anybody to write you, or do you want them to
come? Well, I would love it if they did.
Okay.
Yes, I would be delighted.
Do you have an email or something that they
Yes, I do.
Okay, give it out.
K.N. Bender, B-E-N-D-E-R, 2, K.N. Bender 2, at yahoo.com.
So that's,
the number 2.
The letter K-N?
Excuse me?
The letters K-N? K-N
yes.
Bender, B-E-N-D-E-R, all in one part.
K.N. Bender 2.
At yahoo.com. If they want to call, if they want to email you and talk to you.
That would be great. I would love it.
Yeah, that'd be better than calling you on the phone, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Some people get on, they want to start an argument. But if you have any questions of, Reverend Bender, you can call and, email him. And he said he'd be very glad to hear from you. And the book is called The Despiritualized Church. And if you go on our website, it's listed on there, and it's also just now getting into the stores and in Amazon. The Despiritualized Church by Reverend Keith Bender. And, it'll answer a lot of questions. It'll make you think, that's for sure. All right, but Keith, we're coming to the end, and you will be a speaker at our conference in June, on June 12th to the 14th here in Arkansas.
Yes.
And I want to thank you very much. Thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Doris. I'm really pleased.
Okay.
Been a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to finally meeting you in June.
And I will, too.
All right.
Okay, well, thanks for asking me.
Okay. So now I'm saying goodnight to everybody out there who's been listening. Good night, everyone.